Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slidekick.
Yarr!
Today is January 15th, 2018, and this is episode 151, 2017 in review, or the annual Buoy Awards.
You love us! You really love us!
Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we'll be talking about the year that was. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, do you want to get us started today?
Yep, let's jump into the snack world, where we have news from Level 5 via KoroKoro comic that the snack world's treasurers, which is how it is Romanized, I guess, is coming to the Nintendo Switch.
Ooh, exciting.
We still do not have a update on the smartphone release, so maybe we'll be hearing more about that when we hear more about the Switch. I don't know.
Indeed, and you know, the game was released on the 3DS in Japan in August, and it's actually been doing quite well, so I think it's interesting that we're getting this announcement of a Switch port indicating that they intend on supporting it on both platforms. I'm certainly not complaining, but I just was a little surprised to hear this.
Yeah.
We also have word that the upcoming Western release of Circle Entertainment's Mercenaries Saga Chronicles, which is, of course, the Nintendo Switch game that contains all three of these beloved little indie tactics games, will be releasing in North America, Europe, and Australia on Switch in February of 2018.
We also have another piece of KoroKoro news. This is that in KoroKoro Magazine, in February, there will be a serial code for the mythical Pokemon Arceus. This will be a level 100 Arceus that will have some special moves. Judgment, Extreme Speed, Recover, Hyper Beam. I guess those are mostly normal moves. It comes with a Cherish Ball, has the ability Multi-Type, and has a Classic Ribbon. So you cannot get Arceus in Ultra Sun or Ultra Moon by normal means. So if you have a Japanese copy of the Pokemon games, this would be a great opportunity to pick up a pretty cool legendary Pokemon.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess I'll be looking for this week's issue of KoroKoro next time I'm in Japantown.
I guess I'm going to just have to get a Japanese Ultra Moon or something, because, I mean, I know those games well enough that I could fake it until I make it.
We also have word here that a new Gundam game and a port of a previously released Gundam game will both be announced at the Gundam Game New Year Festival 2018 live stream on January 16th, which is tomorrow, which is the same day that this episode should be going live.
Cool.
By the time you're hearing this episode, you will probably already know what the Gundam new game and port is. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong, since I'm basically speaking from the past. I'm expecting the port to be Gundam Breaker on Switch.
Capcom Unity has announced that Sakura will be part of a limited free trial for Street Fighter V Arcade Edition, starting with its launch tomorrow or today if you are listening to this on VOG Network or up on our GameBuoy.org website or other places on the day we're posting this. It'll be available, this trial will be available from January 16th to January 23rd. You'll be able to play as Sakura in story mode with all of her costumes, but you will lose any experience or fight money unless you purchase her for real, not for play, trial play.
I think that sounds like a fair trade-off, though. I actually think that Capcom seems to have learned from a lot of the mistakes that they've made in Street Fighter V previously. I think they're really taking the right tack with the Arcade Edition release, and I really like seeing stuff like this because I think it really incentivizes people to try these new characters and decide for themselves if they're going to be a worthwhile purchase or not. I really like seeing these kinds of trends. I hope that Capcom keeps it up.
Indeed.
We also have word here that Gravity Rush 2's online service will no longer be shut down this week. It was previously announced that the Gravity Rush 2's online service would be shutting down on January 19th, but players in-game have all received a message announcing the delay of the shutdown into July. This will specifically be July 19th, so everyone has, you know, an additional 6 months to do the challenges, rankings, treasure hints, photo guests, ghosts or photo ghosts and the dusty token turn-ins. So it's very
cool.
Good.
Yep. Disgaea has sold over or around nearly 200,000 copies of Disgaea 5 Complete. So
yeah, that's specifically the Nintendo Switch
right,
version.
Right. So Nipponichi Software President Sohei Nikawa-san has mentioned that new IPs and sequels will be expanding into the consumer games market with the PS4 and Switch as the main platform. And also noted that Nipponichi Software is turning 25 this year on July 12th, 2018. Maybe a good time to look back on Nipponichi this summer here on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
We also have news that Super Meat Boy has sold very well on the Switch so far. It just went up last Thursday, I believe, or...
Yeah, it was posted last Thursday, alongside several other games, including Furi and Escapists 2, both of which are other games around this size that I think were really well anticipated. And yet, the Super Meat Boy on Switch first day sales came very close to its originally much-hyped debut on Xbox 360 back in 2010. Of course, the Team Meat folks were all posting on social media about how wild this was, how unexpected it was. Clearly, every indication that this has by far exceeded expectations, which has kind of been the story we've heard from a lot of indie devs publishing on Switch for the first time.
Yeah. And in Pika news, Detective Pikachu is finally coming to the West on March 23rd alongside an extra large size Pikachu, Detective Pikachu amiibo.
I want this amiibo. It's so cute.
It's so cute. And I have to say that my understanding is that it is not Ryan Reynolds' voice in the game voice acting. You know how he's going to be Detective Pikachu in the movie that's coming out, I believe, next year is the plan.
So they say.
But I have to say, the voice they got for the game is pretty close to a Danny DeVito impersonation, so I'm happy. It actually looks really cute.
Excellent. We also have some other release date updates here. We have word that Crypt of the NecroDancer, Nintendo Switch Edition, will be releasing in Japan on February 1st. We also have word here that Zue, the Arge's Adventure, will be releasing on January 24th on PC, courtesy of Xseed Games. Darkest Dungeon will be releasing on Switch on January 18th. Scribblenauts Showdown will be releasing in Europe on March 9th, 2018. Final Fantasy XII The Zodiac Age will be releasing on PC via Steam on February 1st. Ease 8, Lacrimosa of Dana, will be releasing on PC on January 30th. Ambition of the Slimes will be releasing on the Switch on January 18th. And Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle will be releasing on PS4, Switch, and PC on June 5th. With all this having been said, Slaggy, do you have anything else to add?
Not at the moment.
All right, well then, let's bust into some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god, news.
Slaggy, if you'd like to get us started.
Yes, this is a fun one. We have news that the House of the Dead series is coming back to arcades. This is going to be with House of the Dead Scarlet Dawn. It's going to start location testing in Japan from January 19th to January 21st.
Excellent, excellent.
It'll have an air cannon and a vibrating seat to add tension to the experience.
Ooh, la la. You know, this game, based on all the screenshots we've gotten in the various assets, it looks like kind of a return to form for House of the Dead, but it does at least so far appear to be being presented in one of the deluxe cabinets with like the sit-down bench style screen. It's too soon to say for sure, but maybe like a 3D effect screen in play. Definitely very exciting to me. And doubly exciting is that these are exactly the kinds of experience-based arcade games that do typically get brought to the...
Yeah, I was just thinking.
To the States, courtesy of places like Round One or Dave & Buster's. So even people who are maybe a little less fortunate than us here in the Bay Area will still have a chance to play these games. You know, we are super lucky with how many arcades we still have here, Slidekick.
Right? Like, arcades are a thing? What?
Yes, seriously. I mean, we don't have as many as we used to, but we still got more than most. That having been said, we will definitely be keeping y'all updated on House of the Dead, Scarlet Dawn, and hopefully we will have some kind of first-hand impressions at some point.
Indeed. I believe we have some other Sega teases.
What?
Yes, there is a countdown site that's due to end on January 19th at 3 p.m. Japanese Standard Time, when something is expected to be revealed. All we know is that it's from Sega Interactive, which means probably an arcade-related thing, and it has the keyword Senki, so I don't know.
Interesting, so like some kind of like a Lodoss War-type game. I mean, any Senki is typically any kind of like war journal or war record, so like I think of Lodoss War when I think of Senki.
Well, and the clock looks kind of like a like fantasy-ish almost, but almost like a little bit of like fantasy steampunk clock.
I don't know. Like Clockworks.
Yeah.
Well, either way, we will have news by the end of the week, so definitely expect to hear more of this from us next episode. We also have word of a new Yume Nikki game. Yume Nikki, of course, is the surrealistic adventure game that has a huge fan following, but to the best of my knowledge, never actually got finished. It was a freeware title by Kikiyama. It was created in RPG Maker 2003, and just a huge, huge fan base for this game. Apparently, we have a sequel coming, Dream Diary. Should have more information on it no later than January 25th.
Excellent. Well, we also have news of an open beta test for the free-to-play mecha battle game Border Break. Not to be confused with Borderlands 2. This is a Sega-developed PS4 exclusive. Lots of Sega news today.
Yeah, well, this is exciting because Border Break has been an arcade online competitive game for many years now, and a lot of people had given up hope that we would ever see a home version of Border Break. So this is really exciting news, I think. I definitely think there are a lot of people who are going to be super into this, and you know, since it's an online console game at this point, hopefully we'll see a worldwide release down the line. I think a lot of Western gamers could get a lot out of this. We also have word here that according to Famitsu, the Japanese video game market, or more specifically the console video game market, has grown for the first time in 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would have been like PS3 launch era, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking at that like era with, you know, PS3 and Wii.
Wow. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense though.
Indeed. Yeah, you know, they note that a big part of this increase is due to the brisk hardware sales of the Nintendo Switch, and the PS4 has continued to churn out stable numbers. Not really seeing huge increases, but not seeing huge decreases either.
Well, that's still good.
So, yeah, the last time the Japanese gaming market was doing so well was when the DS Lite, Nintendo Wii, and PS3 launched in 2006.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was some prosperous times.
Indeed. So, let's hope this can keep on keeping on. All right. So, we are going to go into our Culture Club now. You know, typically on Culture Club, we talk a little less about games that have necessarily been announced, a little more about stories impacting sort of the larger gamer culture. But we had a new Nintendo Direct this week.
And there was a little bit of interesting Nintendo Direct culture discussion about it, too.
Well, there was a very interesting subculture to the Nintendo Direct. And we've seen this sort of forming, but it's really gotten to the point now where Nintendo official was tweeting along with fans, sending out teases about an upcoming Direct the day before this event.
Well, not only that, but this was technically a Nintendo Mini Direct, or Direct Mini.
So this was, yeah, a Nintendo Direct Mini.
So a lot of people kind of thinking, like, well, if this is just a Mini, there's a lot more going on that they're not telling us about, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there are a lot of us who feel like, you know, there's a lot of things that we already know about that weren't discussed at this Direct. There's the fact that the Direct was called a Mini. Why would you call it a Mini if you weren't going to do a regular one at some point?
Yeah, just a lot of people on social media discussing it. And
well, and let me ask you, because I actually feel like they announced a lot, especially considering this is only like a 14-minute presentation. I'd like to ask you then, how was your overall impression?
I was very impressed with what they showed in the Mini Direct, and you know, that just goes to show me, if this was just the Mini Direct, that when they do the next real Direct, that there's going to be some pretty big bombshells being dropped.
Well, and we should note, you know, and the reason why I ask you how you felt about it, we don't know that there will be another Direct. It's entirely possible that we won't hear anything else out of Nintendo until E3.
There will never be another Direct ever.
We don't know that we will hear from Nintendo again until E3. If that were the case, how, you know, how would you feel about this Direct?
I mean, we have a lot of stuff coming in the spring, so, I mean, I would be happy with it, but I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, some of these announcements, like new title announcements, taking a mini Direct slot, like I said, just means that the next time we do see a Direct, if it's before E3, it's going to be some pretty big bombshells, ba-bombs.
Yeah, I mean, and I will note, you know, I'm one of those people who thinks we'll see another Nintendo announcement in the next week, another Direct in the next month or two. I'm just noting we shouldn't talk about those things as a foregone conclusion.
No, I know.
But the wild thing about this Direct, you know, there's been rumors and gossip about this Direct since, like, November. I think we've, in some previous episodes, even talked about the January Direct months ago now. So, of course, it is interesting that it did pop up. It did happen sort of on the same date that was rumored for weeks, 2 months before it occurred, January 11th, I believe that was. Did not get any of the ZOMG, you know, face-blowing announcements. And yet, for me, this was an extremely rewarding Direct. I actually got a lot of announcements very specific to my tastes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to start off by talking about the World Ends With You Final Remix announced for Nintendo Switch. This is, of course, a remake, or really more like an enhanced port of the DS Classic. Of course, you know, the DS game, very well loved, ended up getting a iOS port that unfortunately failed to really find an audience. The interesting thing is, at the end of the iOS port, there was actually a tease for a sequel that was implied to have been canceled at some point since then. Interestingly, the final remix of The World Ends With You is going to be expanding that tease into an all-new, quote-unquote, substantial playable scenario. So, in a lot of ways, this is almost like we're getting The World Ends With You and its sequel in one release on the Switch.
And because this is Square Enix, it would be like a 1.3 release, maybe?
They're calling it Final Remix. I mean, that's already
pretty
Square Enix-y.
Yeah.
This, for me, is an absolute must-buy. I'm completely stoked for all of the new people who are going to get to experience this
franchise.
Well, I missed
out on it in the DS era, despite the fact that I already knew you at that point.
Well, I was just going to ask if you intended on picking this one up.
Yeah, I don't know why I mean, I guess at that point I was probably too obsessed with Animal Crossing Wild World or something. Who knows?
Probably.
But, yeah, I missed out on this, so, I mean, finally will be time to give it a check out. We also have some new battle Pokemon coming to Pokken Tournament DX. This is part of the Deluxe Battle Pack, and it will be adding two new characters. The initial wave will be coming on January 31st. This has Aegislash, along with support characters Mega, Rayquaza, and Mimikyu. And then on March 23rd, Blastoise will be in the next fighter, and Mew and Celebi will be available as support characters.
Mew!
Right? And Celebi. Legendary buddies! Or I guess they call them mythicals now, but whatever.
I don't really care about Serebii that much, but I like Mew a lot.
You will also be able to get avatar items if you purchase the Deluxe Battle Pack now. So this is pretty cool you know, really Pokken Tournament's getting a bit of new leaf on the Switch. And not only that, but that they are continuing to add characters. How do you feel about this, Captain Spike? Especially knowing that ARMS just was announced to be content complete at this time.
Well, you know, I'm excited about it. Pokken Tournament is a game that I think a lot of us slept on because it's just not as polished as I think we've come to expect from Pokemon games and games sort of coming out of you know, Nintendo publishing, even if, you know, Bamco did most of the dev work. So I think that Pokken Tournament gets a little bit of the shit end of the stick. I'm really excited to see, you know, Pokken Tournament DX at all. You know, obviously DX has been a lot more successful than the Wii U release. It has kind of revitalized the Pokken Tournament fandom, or I should say, Pokken Tournament finally has a fandom. I'm not surprised to see that audience getting catered to with new content. I've already bought it, so I mean, LOL, I'm a sucker, but for me, the most exciting thing about this is almost the fact that if Pokken Tournament DX can get new DLC, at this point now, what's stopping Mario Kart 8? What's stopping Hyrule Warriors, if and when it ever gets a DX release? What's going to stop that from getting new content? So, for me, I'm just really excited about this development on several levels, and I can't wait to play as Blastoise with Mew as my support.
Awesome.
We also have word here that Kirby Star Allies is going to be releasing on March 16th.
Yes.
We also got a new trailer that shows about all of the ways to mix and match abilities while playing either with friends co-op or with CPU in co-op mode. You know, you'll be able to combine abilities. You'll be able to do special team-up attacks. It looking really good.
I can't wait for you to throw me with the friend throw ability.
The game itself has gotten some really fantastic visual upgrades. I'm no, like, graphics whore, but obviously when a game looks good, it's better than it looking bad.
Like,
so that's exciting.
Kirby's model literally has little stars reflected in his eyes.
Yeah, it's super, super cute, and I cannot wait to throw Slag Kick. Friend throw.
And then maybe we can have a few more friends over and have a friend train.
Friend train.
Oh, wait. In other news, we have Hyrule Warriors is coming to the Nintendo Switch. This will be the ultimate version of the game with all of the content. So, like, all the characters that had been available from both the Wii U and the... Was that a new 3DS exclusive?
I believe so.
Anyways, from both of the game's editions, along with new... I believe they're just costumes, but new costumes of Breath of the Wild, Link and Zelda. So this is really cool. I only got around to playing a little bit of Hyrule Warriors on Wii U, and, you know,
Hyrule Warriors Legends was available on the original 3DS.
Oh, okay. Thanks for the clarification. I couldn't remember that. I didn't put a lot of time into it on the Wii U. I know there are some people who are saying, like, wow, there's so many Wii U ports coming to the Switch. I am not mad, honestly, because the Switch is, you know, going to have some lasting power. I can bring it over. We could play Hyrule Warriors split screen or whatever, you know, so I am pretty down for this. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm stoked. You know, I played this game on the Wii U. I did not play it on the 3DS, though, so I'm really excited at having one edition of the game that has all of the content from both releases. And that's because, you know, some of the maps and missions from the DS version were not released on the Wii U version, as I understand it. Those characters were, but a lot of their, like, unique content was still exclusive to the 3DS game. So for at least console players of this game, this will still also be the first time a lot of this content is showing up in the Hyrule Warriors experience. You know, I'm told that the game has hundreds of hours of gameplay. I put maybe 20 into it. I felt like I got my money's worth. And now, you know, if the Ultimate Edition can give me another 20 hours, that'll be more than worth it for me. So I'm definitely looking forward to this one, particularly after playing Fire Emblem Musou, which really, I enjoyed that game a lot. Like, I really liked that game.
Yeah, that's one I missed out on, but, you know, the Nintendo Musous have been pretty well received, and, you know, people have said they've enjoyed them. The only release date that we know of so far is in Japan, March 22nd. Otherwise, there's just a generic spring release for other regions so far. But, yeah, I think this is pretty cool. This is the definitive edition, is what they're calling it.
Excellent. We also have word here of the upcoming Mario Tennis Aces. This is going to be releasing in spring of 2018. It is from developer Camelot, whom a lot of you are probably familiar with from, you know, Golden Sun, Shining Force, a lot of the best Mario sports titles.
And the Mario Golf ones with all the RPG elements and stuff.
Well, and that's what's actually really exciting about this is actually going to be the first Mario Tennis game to include a story mode since Power Tour on the GBA. So if we really are leaning back toward those sort of RPG elements, well, I think that we might see a real resurgence of the Mario sports fandom that used to be really strong.
Yeah, it looks really cute. Like, I like seeing, like, the little boss battles and stuff, and I'm just curious, because we didn't see a lot about how it plays, I'm curious if it will allow you to share the joy to, like, almost Wii sports style play.
I'm sure it will. We also have word here that Ease 8, Lacrimosa of Dana, will be getting a summer 2018 release on Switch.
Hopefully with those new voices.
I'm sure the Western release will have the re-recorded voices and new script.
We have a free update for Super Mario Odyssey, and this involves placing balloons in various places of the levels and then trying to find where your friends put the balloons, or vice versa.
Yeah, I think that this will be fun. The Balloon World mode, it's being called, definitely looks like it'll be a lot of fun. There's also going to be new snapshot filters and new outfits, including the Sunshine Shades, Musician Hat, and Knight Armor.
Yeah, the Musician ones looks like you're part of the New Donk City Band, which is really cool.
Cute.
Yeah, so this is coming in February.
Excellent.
Do you think this will tempt you to dive back into the Odyssey, Yossi?
Probably not, but maybe. I mean, it'll really depend on what my friends on Twitter and my friends on the Nintendo Online are doing. Like, if people are having hella fun about it and posting videos of themselves having hella fun, I'm sure I'll get sucked back in. But if it doesn't really cause any waves, yeah, I doubt I'll pick it back up.
That's fair. I have a question for you involving this next one. Have you ever wanted to tag team the heroines of SNK Fighters?
See, I already did that with Gals Fighters on the Neo Geo Pocket.
Oh, so you've been having a tag team frenzy in your pocket for a long time now, then.
Sure have. We're talking, of course, about SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy. This was announced for Nintendo Switch at the Direct event. This was the worldwide debut of this game. It is getting a PS4 port, although that obviously wasn't discussed at the Direct. It's going to be releasing in the summer of 2018. It's a new fighting game. Nippon Ichi Software is going to be publishing for SNK. It's very heavy on fan service. I'm using a much enhanced version of the King of Fighters 14 game engine. Focus on doing customizations to your characters, getting to see them wearing, you know, the outfits you put them in.
I thought when you said their poses, you were talking about something else.
No,
how do you feel
about
this, though? Do you feel that this is, oh, cool, all-female fighter, or is it just a little too etchy for your taste?
No, I'm super into it. I guess this is one of those things where some people are going to find it problematic and have a problem with that, and I do not mean to take away from that at all. It doesn't bother me. You know, we've been having games like this in the SNK fandom and history of SNK for the last 20 years. While obviously some of the, like, pantsu shots are going to be a little offensive, for the most part, it's not going to be like a Senran Kagura game where I'm enjoying the game but have to do so around the moe stuff. So no, I don't find this problematic. For people who are offended by it, do find it problematic. You have every right to feel that way. I just don't agree on this one.
Yeah, yes, Queen of Fighters. And isn't
in Gals Fighters, it was literally the Queen of Fighters tournament.
Oh really?
Yes,
that's awesome. And then they say that there's a arcade classic SNK game that just went up.
Oh yeah, it was Art of Fighting 2, but you know there are new Neo Geo games every week, so I didn't find it that.
Yeah, it's just, I thought it was cool that they were like, oh, hey, and if you want to see one of these awesome heroines, check this out. I just thought it was cool that they gave a shout out.
I would have been more into it if it had been a better game than Art of Fighting 2.
Oh!
We also have word of Mario & Rabbids Story DLC coming in spring of 2018. This will include a roster update to the game, which adds Donkey Kong as a playable character.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem that his coconut gun will fire in spurts, because it looks like he has a banana rain, which actually still looks really cool. But you never know, there might be a coconut gun.
We also got word of a port of Payday 2 for Nintendo Switch. This will be releasing on January 27th, and it will be the timed exclusive debut of a new character. The Japanese computer whiz, Joy, will be playable first on Switch. That'll be hitting in February.
That's interesting, because Payday 2 is kind of an oldie, right?
Well, that's where a lot of the complaints about Switch getting old ports comes from.
I just didn't expect it, but do you plan to pick this up? And
it's not really my kind of game. The trailer during the Direct did look interesting, but the fact remains it's just not really the kind of experience I tend to get into.
But hey, maybe for people who were into it and then like they're like, oh, I want to play with my buddies in the same room, they could do that.
Yeah, that's super cool. It just maybe not for me.
We have two Nindy Indies. They're not Ninty exclusive, but two that got the spotlight. This is Faye and Celeste. Faye is the...
Faye? More like meh.
Wow. Okay. Faye is the forest creature, very pretty, kind of gives off like Journey vibes game that was announced a couple E3s back. And Celeste is a retro style climber platformer with like difficulty level variable gameplay. I thought that they both looked really cool. I mean, I've been familiar with Faye. I've actually been looking forward to it. Apparently you haven't.
You take it so personally. No, Faye looks fine. Calm down.
But I'm actually curious, how do you feel about Celeste? Because that seems like the kind of game that you would play. I mean, maybe
well, it's
not
the
much...
new game by Matt Thorson, the creator of Towerfall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it looks very similar. The movement style works very similar. So if you've previously played Towerfall and thought, like, oh, this would make an interesting move set for, like, a platforming adventure, that's what Celeste is. So, yeah, I'm really excited for it, and I will absolutely be picking it up on January 25th.
Yeah, I thought it was... I think it's cool that they have, like, the different difficulty availabilities.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that.
I totally forgot that was Matt Thorson, yeah, so...
And will you be picking up Fab when it releases on February 16th?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Excellent, excellent. We also got the announcement.
And, I mean, I'm glad that these are both on Switch, because I will pick them both up on Switch rather than another console.
Excellent. We also got the announcement of a new Wii U port. This is Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. It'll be releasing May 4th, and it will be adding a new easy mode to the game in the form of the playable character Funky Kong.
Excuse me, it's called a funky mode, and it's already one of the best gaming memes of 2018.
It is already a fantastic gaming meme. You're
and
not
Knuckles
wrong there.
Featuring Dante from the Devil May Cry series.
Really excited about this. I thought Tropical Freeze was a great game that way too many people slept on. Super stoked that people are going to have another chance at that one.
Indeed. And this last one, Salute the Sun. I mean, praise the sun. Because Dark Souls Remastered is coming to the Nintendo Switch. This, of course, is from From Software. So a lot of people seem really excited about this. Dark Souls games, typically not my sort of game, just because they are die a lot until you overcome this obstacle. But, I mean, I recognize that they are well-designed games and that a lot of people enjoy them. So I think this is cool news. Do you think this means that eventually we'll see, like, Bloodborne's and such coming to Switch?
Well, the Bloodborne IP is owned by Sony, so I don't think that will happen.
Oh, that's right.
But I do think we will see Dark Souls 2 and 3 get ports. We know that this Dark Souls Remastered is actually running on a version of the Dark Souls 3 engine.
Oh, well then.
So if the engine porting work is already done, as long as it's established that there's a user base that's interested in this kind of content that's gonna, you know, be profitable to cater to, I definitely think we'll get more Dark Souls ports on the Switch.
Indeedly-do.
All right, well, all of that having been said, we have some other news here in Culture Club. Slaggy, if you'd like to take this one?
Yeah, so, you know, we're hearing a lot about VR lately. I mean, it does not seem to be a passing fad, but the Nintendo of France managing director, Philippe Levoux, has recently stated that the company doesn't have any plans to be looking into 4K gaming or VR gaming at the moment. He expressed some doubts that VR headsets really will appeal to the mainstream market, and that, you know, similarly to that 4K TVs were not initially adopted. You're starting to see them a lot more now, but, you know, that if Nintendo does the exact same thing, they would die, as they're smaller compared to their rivals. So, I mean, I think it's good that Nintendo continues to do their own thing. I feel like of the big three, VR is kind of what Sony's trying to do, since they have invested a lot in it. And I feel like in order to make good on that investment, they need to continue with it. But we also see, you know, HTC, we have Oculus, you know, still continuing their work. How do you feel about Nintendo not focusing on 4K VR?
I think right this very moment it makes sense. I'm still a little bummed at the idea. I mean, I feel like Nintendo Switch already has the perfect form factor to just, like, literally drop the unit into a
Virtual
headset.
Boy 2.
Literally just drop the screen only into a headset and you're already set.
Virtual Boy 2.
But, that having been said, I could understand if they just want to keep it steady, do crazy experimental things on their next platform. Hopefully not a whole new platform, but just like a Switch 2.
Right.
I think that, you know, getting into 4K obviously is going to require just bigger tech, so I understand why they're not getting into that. VR, it just, like you yourself said, it's really just going to have to do about money, but right. I just would love to see them experiment in that space, but I understand that it makes better business sense to just keep
I
the ship
like
steady.
I feel like it's less of a big deal than when they chose to not have the Wii be HD.
Oh, definitely there. I mean, the thing is, Nintendo Switch, whatever they do next, assuming it's just a Switch 2, I will almost certainly have some kind a 4K solution. So they'll get there. This isn't a Wii Part 2 situation yet.
Because, like, playing the Wii on HD, like, you know, it was doable, but, you know.
But that it wasn't exactly pretty.
It wasn't very pretty. Well, speaking of things that are pretty looking, but didn't end up being very pretty technologically, is the Dragon Ball FighterZ Z beta, which really had a lot of network problems. So, basically, Bandai Namco has offered to extend the beta if the network issues continue throughout this beta period.
Yeah.
This, I know, I watched you try and try and try to get a fight in, and basically didn't happen.
Yeah, I spent a solid hour yesterday in bits and spurts, maybe 15 minutes at a time, trying to get into a match, and I was not able to get into a match all day yesterday. I was actually really upset about it. So I, you know, I'm still excited for Dragon Ball FighterZ, but I'm probably done with this beta, and I'm kind of frustrated right now when I think about this game. So it really, really sucks it came out like that. Something else that is interesting, though, is that we have word here that Gonzalo Barrios, better known as Zero in the fandom, will no longer be professionally competing in Super Smash Bros. For Wii U for the time being.
Wow.
He's taking a break from competition. You know, this is probably, he's probably considered, like, the best Smash Bros. Player in the world right now, Zero is. It's going to be cool because, you know, he basically dominates every competition, and some people feel like it's a little boring to watch the same person win over and over. From that regard, you know, there's probably going to be a new life to competitive Smash for a while, but it's always sad to see a great player go without seeing him get beat first.
Yeah, he said he'll probably come back when there's a Smash for Switch or something like that, and that he's not going to just stop playing Smash. He's just not going to compete anymore for the time being, and he might even be like a guest commentator, stuff like that. But for now, he wants to write a book, learn a third language, and take better care of himself. So you go, Zero.
You go, Glen Coco. Let's see, we also have word that
no more Smash 4 for you. You go, Glen Zero.
We know, we've gotten word that the man that was arrested for the swatting call that led to the death of an innocent civilian has been arrested and charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Good.
You know, he was also charged with giving false alarm, interference with law enforcement. His bond was set at $500,000, which, gosh darn, this is pretty unfortunate. It just sucks. So many lives ruined by this stupid, stupid act someone did.
Yep.
I have a lot of really complex feelings about the prison system in this country, but definitely happy that something is happening to the person who caused all of this. I mean, this is just terrible.
I think you said it better than I could.
Well, I didn't even say it all that well, so thanks. Either way, really conflicted feelings, just sorry all around. Holy shit.
Yeah. So our last piece of Culture Club news has to do with the Overwatch League. You know, this has been a lot of people talking about it lately, but basically what we wanted to spotlight is an article over on Compete, which is Kotaku's crossover with Deadspin, where they talk about competitive gaming, of course, and it where the author Nathan Grayson, well, that kind of rhymes, I like that, I never noticed that. Well, anyways, Nathan Grayson pointed out that no Overwatch League signed the most notable female pro player. This was Kim Gaeguri Seon. I apologize if I am not pronouncing her name right. You might have remembered that she was a bit of so controversial, but that was because people were convinced that she was cheating because she was a boss bitch Zarya. And
yes.
Basically had to deal with death threats and a bunch of other shit like that, but then was like, nope, here's my live stream. And she was part of the Apex League, which was, you know, a really premier esports league in South Korea, where she was the first woman ever to play in that league. And so I just appreciated that Grayson pointed out that, you know, it's ridiculous that not only are there other great, you know, female pro Overwatch players out there, but, you know, especially someone who is considered to be one of the best players in the world, not even being considered because Overwatch League is basically a sausage fest. And then I guess, you know, there's also, like, apparently Overwatch League players and fans are doing Ugandan Knuckles bullshit, which, gross. But, yeah, what are your thoughts on this about,
I think it really sucks. I mean, obviously, that's a little bit of an understatement, but I think it's really unfortunate that this person is clearly speaking specifically to Gyaguri, because, like, she is clearly one of the world's best Overwatch players. Like,
yeah, she's been Miss Overwatch Queen since she was 17.
Well done there, but it's, I mean, there's not even, like, a real question. Like, she's literally one of the best players of this game in the world. So, it's just really disappointing that not only is there no female representation, but there's potentially not representation of the actual best Overwatch player in the world. So, just really, really super upsetting. Super upsetting.
And then there's
upsetting
just lots of excuses. Like, I guess Houston said, oh, well, we have, you know, there'd be communication barriers. But then the New York Excelsior team is made up of Korean players, and they just said, oh, well, she doesn't fit our current goals. And the London Spitfire also has an all-Korean roster, but they were saying, oh, we wanted a team that already knows how to work together, and that, you know, we didn't want to just piece together with, like, you know, the best players. We wanted, so, I mean, yes, maybe they do have some valid reasons, but I think it's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't think they're valid reasons. I think they're excuses. It's bullshit. Well, let's get on to happier news here. We're already 45 minutes deep in this episode. Let's start talking about our discussion. Let's start looking back at the year in review. Unless you have anything else to add about that news story.
Nope.
I just feel like there's only so many ways we can say this is sexist bullshit.
Yeah, unfortunately, Overwatch has lots of great things and also lots of shitty things. But, I mean, that's gaming for you.
Pretty much. I wanted to start off looking back at the year that was by talking about six of the sort of big news stories that we followed this year. And it's kind of funny because basically the first four of them that we're going to talk about could just be pegged under one umbrella. So maybe this is almost like the top three news stories of the year. But Sai, why don't you get us started here? What was the number six big news story of the year for us?
Our number six biggest news story of the year was IO Interactive becoming an independent. An independent studio from Square Enix. What's notable about this story was that they were able to retain rights to the Hitman franchise. So, you know, you don't typically see big publishers letting the developers take franchises with them. So, I thought that was pretty cool. I have not played the Hitman games as of recently, but I recognize that they're really well put together and that the people who play them really enjoy them, especially with the more the recent spin that they've taken was that the Hitman reboot, so to speak.
I don't understand what you're asking.
It's just called Hitman, right? That's the most recent one.
That's correct.
It was kind of like the reboot or whatever, being kind of episodic and, you know, very open worldy, sandboxy in a way. And I know that
I wouldn't necessarily call it open worldy, but I would call it sandboxy. Yeah. And it was, I thought, actually a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the Hitman release. I supported it across multiple chapters and even across multiple devices. Definitely very happy to see IO getting to continue on with Hitman.
Yeah.
We also, of course, had word of Avalanche Software. This is, of course, not to be confused with the other Avalanche Software known as Avalanche Studios. Avalanche Software is the one that previously had been known as Sculptured Software, was acquired by Buena Vista Games, became a studio just for Disney stuff. You're probably most familiar with their work on, like, Toy Story 3 or Disney Infinity. Ended up getting shuttered by Disney Interactive Studios when they got out of the gaming industry and closed down Disney Infinity. We talked about that as one of our big news stories last year for the prior year. But something that happened right after we recorded that episode pretty much is that Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment acquired Avalanche Software and reopened it with much of the same staff, including the same CEO, John Blackburn. They have, since their resurrection, released one game, And ironically, that is Cars 3, Driven to Win.
Which is weird to see a WB logo on a Cars product.
Yeah, but, you know, they actually were able to keep their Octane engine software, which the engine that they built for some of their earlier games. So definitely exciting stuff that we got to see these guys continue on. And, you know, they're still working away now on whatever's next.
Cars 3 2, Driven to Win Again. That's a joke. Our number four story is that BioWare Montreal, who you might be familiar with as, I don't know, the developers of the Mass Effect series and such, has been absorbed into Motive Softwares after Mass Effect Andromeda was a bombota.
Yeah. Mass bombota. So, you know, and I would say that as sort of an addendum to this, or like a sub point to this, also the fact that the Mass Effect series is basically dead for the time being, also kind of a big news story that we talked a lot about this year. What are your thoughts on this one, Saggy, about BioWare Montreal's management and handling, and about Mass Effect overall?
I always forget that BioWare Edmonton is the Canadian BioWare studio that did the original Mass Effect trilogy.
Yeah, Mass Effect. You know, they actually, these folks, the ones from Montreal, they really cut their teeth on, like, the DLC expansions and the multiplayer stuff from 3, as I recall. And then after the flop of Andromeda, which was their first time at bat, like, sort of as the main team on Mass Effect, they got cut down.
Yeah, so this is unfortunate. It really cuts down BioWare to Austin and Edmonton. And then Austin, basically, aside from doing Star Wars The Old Republic, you know, they're basically having to do Dragon Age stuff and help out Edmonton. So, like, they didn't even get to do anything with Shadow Realms, which looks like it was going to be really cool a few years ago. And this just sucks that just the whole situation with BioWare sucks.
Just the whole way that EA mismanaged them sucks.
But, I mean, you know, it was kind of a big deal that Casey Hudson came back, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was, but we'll see if it ends up meaning anything.
Yeah, so...
We also, of course, had the closure of Visceral Studios.
I think that's one of the ones, not to make light of it, but that we felt most viscerally in the gaming community.
Yeah, I mean, kind of you did make light of it.
No, just that, you know, it, like, because it just really hit a lot of people hard, you know?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Not that some of that studio closures don't. It's just, you know, I think that because, you know, this was, Visceral was based over in Redwood City, so, you know, locally based.
Yep, they were working on a new Star Wars game. It has sort of now become known as Star Wars Ragtag, but, you know, it's supposed to be this really beautiful game, supposed to be like an Uncharted 4 competition. Amy Hennig from Uncharted was, you know, doing the writing on the game and doing a direction on the game. Ended up not impressing EA enough. We've talked a lot about sort of the back and forth of exactly how fair or unfair that was or was not to both EA and to Visceral. Definitely, you know, you can read some really great articles over on Kotaku about this. They were very vocal about this situation, and we wouldn't know half of what we do know if not for their quality reporting on this topic. That having been said, you know, it just really sucks that basically this one project failed to gel due to moving goalposts, changing targets, and ultimately a lot of people now, you know, out of work because of corporate politics and poor planning.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, if there is ever another Dead Space game, it'll probably just be developed by another rando EA studio and probably not, you know, be as successful as what, you know, made the Dead Space game successful.
Well, and that's even debatable. I mean, it's not debatable that the game will be made by someone else, but that those games were ever successful is debatable. Of course, you know, they did all move millions of units, but EA insisted repeatedly that, you know, they weren't profitable, even though there's a lot of indication to the opposite argument. So we'll see.
I mean, I heard that those games had fans.
Oh, well, in terms of game design, they have a ton of fans. I count myself in among them. Yeah, I'm just noting that EA always seemed to indicate that they were underperformers, despite them being great games that, at least on the surface, sold well. Sort of shades of Square Enix's claims that Tomb Raider was a disappointment, despite selling 6 million units when it released. That one will stick in my cough forever.
A little happier news now. Well, a lot happier news. The number two story, and it would probably have been the number one story if the number one story had not been really crazy, is Switchmas. So basically, the release and success of the Switch and how there was a steady stream of releases that made every day feel like Switchmas.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we got word out of, like, for example, Bandai Namco last week that the Switch SKU of Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2, for example, sold more than 500,000 units, so it's now the single best-selling SKU of the entire Dragon Ball Xenoverse franchise worldwide. We're just, Konami has talked about their incredible payoff for Super Bomberman R, where they've sold ridiculous numbers. Obviously, we talked about Nipponichi Software and Disgaea 5 Complete earlier this episode. So, obviously, we talked earlier this episode about the Nintendo Switch literally revitalizing the Japanese console market. So we're just seeing extremely positive results from the release of the Nintendo Switch, and the Nintendo Switch's success is inspiring other successes. It's sort of like what trickle-down economics is supposed to look like, except it actually looks like that.
Yeah.
But Saigi, I would actually like you to start the discussion on what our biggest news story this year is, because it's a whopper of a doozy.
Well, I don't know if I can really talk, because I'm in a lot of financial distress, because my 7-year-old son, Timmy, just spent $3,000 on loot boxes. Okay, now I'm being silly, but, you know, the issue of loot boxes this year in gaming, basically being a form of gambling that governments, both in the United States, Hawaii specifically, and abroad, internationally, I believe Germany was cracking down, or Belgium, or both, starting to really crack down and saying, no, these are not okay. And then just really kind of making us look at, you know, us as gamers looking at, you know, are we gonna, like, protest games like Star Wars such and such that had the loot box drama? You know, how is a Overwatch loot box different from one of those types of loot boxes, etc.? So, I think it sucks if anyone, whether through a gambling addiction or just because they were a child and didn't know better and used mommy's credit card or whatever the situation, I think it sucks that, you know, people basically became gambling addicts over the years with this trend in gaming. And I think it's overall a positive thing that governments are, you know, and we usually, when we think of government getting involved with games, it's like, oh, those video games are gonna make people go out and shoot guns and be violent. But in this case, I think it's really about consumer protection and for not to stigmatize gaming, rather, prevent these game companies from, you know, relying on these predatory practices.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, we've talked a lot about this over the last few episodes, but really, we've gotten to a point now where games are being designed specifically to prey on people who have inclinations that can be exploited for profit, the same way that, you know, casinos tend to be designed. So it's really, to me, becoming a little more black and white than I usually feel on stuff like this, because, again, games are being designed to exploit people, and that's fucked up, like, to financially exploit money out of them.
Yeah.
Things are being really designed predatorially, and it just leaves a really gross taste in my mouth. It's one of those things where, you know, again, Slaggy was talking about the way that, you know, sometimes games have been discussed in the larger media regarding certain quote-unquote sensitive topics, I guess we could say. But this is one where I'm actually glad that people are getting involved. I'm glad people are talking about this. I'm still really finding where my own opinions on this lie, because, you know, for a long time I thought, oh, well, the way Overwatch does it is okay, but the way, you know, oh, this other game, you know, Final Fantasy Online or whatever, or Monster Hunter Frontier, like, some of these games do have some choices that I think, like, oh, that's actually a little, it's a little bit taking advantage of its consumer base. I don't know that I like that so much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm still figuring out where the line for me is drawn, but I think right this very moment, I just feel like games would maybe be better with more traditional unlock systems and not bringing in these nickel and diming microtransaction nonsense designs that really, again, treat its consumers as prey to exploit long term. Games as a service right now means like a long term ripoff, basically, and I don't think that's cute.
Yeah, you know, I think you forgot the biggest news here on your top six when you were putting this together, because really, I think the biggest news is that after what will have been, you know, 14 years when it releases later this year with the World of Warcraft Battle for Azeroth, that the male orcs will be able to have an upright posture at the barbershop. So finally getting the chiropractic help that they deserve.
Well, I'm at least glad that you just acknowledged to our legion of listener that I had to put this whole damn show roll together on my own without your help.
Hey, don't be a warlord and drain our fun.
All right, let's talk about the games themselves. We are going to do our traditional top 10 or the Buoy Awards, but we do want to give out some of the like pre-show awards first. The first of these, of course, is honorable mention. Both Slagkick and I have different winners for our honorable mention Buoy Awards. Slaggy, why don't you get us started?
So am I doing all the nominees I had?
You can give a brief mention of the other nominees, but I would prefer you not talk about them in depth.
Okay. So one of my nominees for honorable mention this year was Destiny 2. Great game. I just did not get far enough in it progression-wise to really feel that I could have put it on my top 10 list. Another one, Jackbox Party Pack 4. Once again, another great Jackbox entry. Just there were so many games this year that were great that in a in a year with less big marquee releases, maybe Jackbox would have made my list. But my honorable mention goes to Mario Kart 8 DX. This is because it's a great game, but it is a remake, and I just felt that, you know, again, in a year where there were so many great titles that I couldn't give a top 10 slot to this game, even though, you know, it runs great on the Switch. I love being able to play Mario Kart 8 anytime, anywhere. You know, I talked about how I had a great time with it with my family. So that's why Mario Kart 8 DX is my honorable mention this year.
Excellent. Let's see. So my runners-up for honorable mention were Super Bomberman R, which I actually thought was a really great revitalization of a classic. Yooka-Laylee, which, again, you know, I thought was a really fantastically designed Nintendo 64 game in 2017. I think a lot of the hate that it gets is from people who forget what games were like back then. I don't know about all y'all, but I did not put my money into a modern reimagining of that kind of game. I put my money into a new game like that. So I was very happy with the final result of Yooka-Laylee. Unfortunately, this was just an incredibly strong year for games and literally nothing else. Disgaea 5 Complete definitely gets a mention, as does Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. All of these games in a lesser year could have been in my top 10, as was my actual honorable mention Buoy Award winner, which would be Horizon Zero Dawn, which is a truly, truly, truly phenomenal game that is had its impact slightly lessened by releasing in the same year as Assassin's Creed Origins and Zelda Breath of the Wild, which are two games that do very similar things. Still, Horizon Zero Dawn, a truly fantastic game that I strongly recommend everybody check out. We try not to harp on the negative too much here, but it's inevitable that in every year we are going to have some notable disappointments. So, Saggy, I'd like to hear from you. Who wins the buoy for you for biggest disappointment?
Well, my runner-up was Pokemon Duel because, that game just did not click with me at all. I think a lot of the other Pokemon handheld games are fine, like Shuffle, etc. Even Magikarp Jump, which was silly. But Pokemon Duel just did not... I didn't find it very fun. But my biggest disappointment was actually Persona 5. And a lot of it was due to the way it handled a lot of its story beats, including its treatment of LGBTQ individuals. I actually stopped playing because I was so disappointed by that. I recognize that there were a lot of good qualities to Persona 5, but I think for a game that I had been looking forward to for such a long time and that had been incredibly hyped and, you know, really was well received by a lot of people and by the games media, that it was my biggest disappointment this year, which really hurts to say because I love the Persona games.
Yeah, my biggest disappointments, runners-up probably Persona 5, similar reasons to you, but also the the fact that it's on a stationary console, but wants, you know, 80 to 100 hours of my time, that's just really difficult for me to find time for. I still hope to finish Persona 5 someday, but it's been
maybe
a real struggle
Persona 5
for
Platinum or something.
It's just been a real struggle for me at this point, given the real difficulty I'm having connecting to its narrative and the fact that I have to be in front of a TV for it, which is just not how I do most of my gaming right now. Mass Effect Andromeda, I think, goes without saying, but also Double Dragon 4. Definitely a real missed opportunity here in the revisiting of that classic series. I did buy it on Switch the day it came out and was reminded what it was like.
Cool!
But the actual winner of the biggest disappointment buoy from me goes to Metroid Samus Returns, which when I first started playing, I was super into. I thought it was really fresh, the way that the combat counter system worked. I thought the ways that they revitalized the first section or two of the game world was fantastic. Samus Returns is, or Return of Samus is one of my favorite Game Boy games. I'm very familiar with it. And as I played more of Metroid Samus Returns, saw more of like things that they changed from the original game, the sort of way that they focused on, you know, you take a ton of damage from every hit, so you really have to, if you're trying to play the game effectively, have to really rely on like the timed counter button combat system. Ultimately, over time, I just got really tedious and stale for me, and I ended up not even finishing the game, even though when I first got it, I was putting hours and hours into it. I just, over time, lost interest because it got really dull and boring for me.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and then we also want to give the dissenting opinion buoy. This is recognition that we thought very different of a game from the rest of mainstream media. This can be good, this can be bad, it can be anything. Psyche, I'd like you to start your dissenting opinion buoy.
Well, I think my runner-up, I didn't go with the runner-up as my most dissenting opinion because I think that actually my opinion is more dissenting from fans and people that I follow on social media who enjoyed this game, and it just hasn't yet quite clicked for me, and as a result, I didn't put as much time into it as, you know, maybe I would have otherwise, and that goes to Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I guess it just feels a little dated to me, especially having watched you play a fair bit of Xenoblade Chronicles X and really being interested in that. I understand that it is a sequel to Xenoblade Chronicles and not to Xenoblade Chronicles X, but almost just seemed like a step backwards in some ways. But, you know, it's definitely something I'll get back to at some point, just kind of not what I was expecting. But I think my biggest dissenting opinion goes to Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which would probably be surprising to a lot of people, especially because they're like, oh, well, it's just like Animal Crossing, but on your phone, and you build a little camp. But for some reason, even though, I think this is just me being weird, because, like, I understand that in the regular Animal Crossing, you've got to return tomorrow to get your fruit from the trees or whatever, you know, and so there's that element of that game's already been there, but something about, like, farmvilling it, like, just really, I just could not really get engaged in it. So, Animal Crossing Pocket Camp's, like, the first one in the series in a long time that I just do not care about.
All right. My runner-up dissenting opinion goes to Destiny 2. You know, I actually think Destiny 2 is a great game with just a few negatives that really prevent it from being, like, a must-have recommend. Like, there's all of the bullshit about the microtransactions and, you know, the shallow gameplay loop, and all of that is absolutely true, but the moment-to-moment gameplay is still so strong that I still think it's, like, a 10 out of 10, basically. I just think the moment-to-moment gameplay in Destiny 2 remains very near to perfect. It just sucks about everything else. But really, the winner of my dissenting opinion buoy, and I'm really eating my own hat on this one, is Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, which I actually think, taken as it is, overlooking the very jank graphics, I actually think is an extremely well-designed and balanced fighting game. I really think that Capcom knocked it out of the park, but for the graphics issue and presentation issues and maybe, you know, the way that they are or are not supporting it and, you know, some of the design issues that they had with the gem system that maybe shouldn't have been there in the first place. But overall, actually a really great and well-designed game that just really needs a few tweaks to really shine.
All right.
All right. All that having been said, let's get it to the nitty-gritty. Question numero uno. Slaggy, you want to get us started? Number 10?
All right. My number 10 for Game Buoy Game of the Year for me is the best alternative for Grindr. And the award goes to Dream Daddy.
Yeah!
There were some things about Dream Daddy that weren't perfect. It was a little bit on the shorter side. But I mean, I have to appreciate that, you know, Dream Daddy ended up being a very sincere dating sim. That there were a lot of really cute story beats, but also there were some, like, really creative things that it did, too. For example, there's one of the daddies you can date is a coffee shop owner, and you go to a local show with him, and it switches to a little thing where you have to get to the front of the stage so you can show the daddy you're cool. There's one with the bearish daddy who has a pet corgi that a lot of people like, and you meet him in the park and you're bragging about your daughters and it's like a Pokemon battle. I just thought there was a lot of cute and clever touches like that, you know, really showed a lot of creativity. And I believe this is the first game that the Game Grumps folks made. So I think it's really encouraging. I thought it was really great that it was inclusive in a lot of ways. You know, there were some unfortunate fandom related things on Tumblr and such, death threats, yada yada, but I overall had a great time with it. I think it's definitely worthwhile for anyone who enjoys visual novels, dating sims, and who you know, wants more LGBTQ content in their gaming. How about you? What is your number 10 game of the year?
Well, I do want to note that I actually agree that Dream Daddy was a really clever game that I liked a lot more than I thought I would. I know a lot of our friends out there in the indie podcasting world were very critical of this game for some of the sexuality stuff, and I actually do get it, but at the same time, I don't want to fault the game for all the things it isn't that we need. I actually think the game on its own is a really delightful, fantastic little experience, and I'm glad that you call it out for that.
When you say sexuality stuff, do you mean that does not have, like, sexy scenes?
Yeah, and a lot of people felt like it could have done more to further the dialogue about LGBT representations in games. It could have been a lot more overt in its, discussions of sexuality and presentations of sexuality. It almost takes a step back from sexuality, and almost a lot of people feel like sterilizes the characters.
I can understand that in trying to just be like, oh, these are just normal dads, and, you know, it's not a big deal that they are dating you.
Well, it's like the lack of political voice that a lot of people attacked Yuri on Ice over.
Okay, yeah. See, that...
And I think it remains an incredibly valid argument that I also think is not the fault of the art itself. Like, I don't really... For example, sticking with the Yuri on Ice thing, I don't think Yuri on Ice is lesser for choosing to tell a story wherein the fact that these characters have a gay romance isn't controversial.
Right.
But we do still need an anime to discuss the problems with LGBT representation. Someone does still need to carry that on. Like,
yeah, and maybe they'll be Dream Daddy too, and they can advance the dialogue or start a dialogue about it.
Oh, absolutely. And I actually, in case it wasn't clear, I'm actually on your side here. I'm glad you brought up Dream Daddy. I think the game gets a lot of hate for not being more, but it's not that game's problems that there are bigger institutionalized problems here.
And I think any sort of variety in the visual novel genre is great. You see so many visual novels out there that are very clearly just
Bishonen pretty boys
and kind of like stock Renpy looking, so that, you know, when people take the time to, you know, infuse it with originality, I really appreciate that.
Excellent. All right, well, my number 10, the buoy for best confusing repackage of a game that is also a teaser / demo of a game people have been waiting a decade for, goes to Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. Of course, it was inevitable that I was going to find a way to give a Kingdom Hearts game an award this year, but the Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue package for me was incredibly exciting because it represented a package which is 2/3 completely new Kingdom Hearts content. We had the back cover movie that gave us a lot of background as far as what's going on with the Keyblade War in the Union Cross mobile social Kingdom Hearts Hearts game. We got the like teaser slash demo for Kingdom Hearts 3 in the form of Birth by Sleep 0.2. And we got the HD remaster of Dream Drop Distance, which is a game that I really, really like and I feel super underappreciated. So all in all, this was a package that was absolutely worth 40 bones or whatever. You can get it now for like 20, and I think it's worth playing, absolutely.
All right. I believe it's time for number 9 then.
Go for it.
All right. My award for Best Director's Cut or New Game Plus of a Monster Battling Game goes to Pokemon Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon. You know, for this, like, we thought, oh, it's kind of the third version of the game, or, you know, that, you know, it's not Pokemon Stars. It's not exactly what we were expecting. I actually was very happy with what Pokemon Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon ended up being. I appreciated the story beats that it did differently from Sun and Moon, and I actually think that the story, like, not that I didn't like it in Sun and Moon, but I actually think the way it handles like the Ultra Space stuff is even cooler in this one. And on top of that, I really appreciated that it got a difficulty boost. It really does feel kind of like a New Game Plus in some way, or like a harder difficulty, and so I appreciate that as someone who, you know, typically does not have too much trouble breezing through these mainline Pokemon games, to actually have to be like, oh, okay, to I'm going to have to go find some more trainers to level or grind out some experience with some wild Pokemon to do this island trial. I appreciated that. I think it's I think the Pokemon series could stand to have a little more difficulty level in it.
Excellent.
How about your number 9? Number 9.
And number 9, the buoy for Best Game Newly in English that you should buy if you like giant robots and strategy, goes to Super Robot Wars V. This is, of course, the most recent iteration of the Super Robot Wars meta franchise. This released on the PlayStation Vita and PS4. But one of the most exciting things about this iteration of the well-loved crossover Giant Robots strategy series is that the Asian release was fully translated into English. We have gotten these kinds of releases before for some of the Gundam games. We've gotten this kind of a release for some of the like original Century or original Universe type games. I think some of those original games have even come out in English in North America, but not the ones with licensed characters and units. So this is kind of the next best thing for that. I'm a big fan of the roster of this game. I'm a big fan of the art in this game, and obviously the fact that it's finally available in English, just absolutely awesome. Highly recommended if you have always been interested in the Super Robot Wars games and haven't gotten around to it. Super easy to import. I strongly, strongly, strongly recommend it.
All right. So now for our number 8 games. My buoy for best shit-talking simulator with a bisexual lead is Life is Strange Before the Storm. So, you know, without the supernatural elements of the original Life is Strange, I wasn't sure how the game was going to differentiate itself from being, you know, another walking simulator, so to speak, but it is a shit-talking simulator. Now,
I am still so over walking simulator as a genre, like, unless we're talking about Quap, like, come on now.
That being said, the shit-talking simulator parts of Life is Strange Before the Storm aren't throughout the entire game, but it is a fun way to have Chloe Sass come into play, but, you know, for those of you who played the original Life is Strange, you get the backstory between Chloe and Rachel, and, you know, I'm definitely happy to see that world expanded. Really a lot of touching moments for me, and a lot of fun little elements. There's one little part where you can take place in an optional D&D campaign, so a lot of cute little touches like that, too. But overall, just a really well-done game, especially since it wasn't Don't Nod who did that one, but still, you know, really well, great soundtrack as well. Just had a good time with it.
Excellent. The number 8 buoy for me, this one is the buoy for best expansion of an MMO that died and came back reborn, fully formed, is Final Fantasy XIV Stormblood. And for me, you know, I've heard some people note, like, oh, I'm really surprised you're considering that as, like, a top 10, like, you didn't get into, like, any of the endgame raids or whatever, and that actually does remain true, but, you know, all of the classes that they added, I've at least dabbled in, and I really enjoy all of them. In particular, Samurai is, like, my new main, so it'd be kind of hard for me not to pick this. I've definitely put in, you know, tens of hours into this expansion. The new storytelling styles, which is just to say that I feel like the narrative is a little more focused than it was. Although part of that might just be the fact that I was stuck in post-patch content for so long.
Finally, we're free.
Right.
You can just buy your way out of it like I did.
Which I did not do. I think that's a predatory design. The fact that literally they have not changed the way that the game flow works so that people still get stuck for 30 hours in this tedious as hell content, but then it's like, oh, if you pay us 40 Earth dollars, you can skip it. Is it 40 or is it 30?
I think it's 24.
24. Okay. Well, if you give us 24 Earth dollars, you can skip it. That leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But Stormblood itself, I thought was an enormous success, fantastic expansion, and it has me really excited for whatever comes next. Ignore the fact that this morning I resubbed to World of Warcraft.
Well, you just want to get that orc a final adjustment really bad, don't you?
Think of the poor Lumbar.
Oh, now we should make like orcs named Lumbar or something. Anyways, that being said, it's time to move on to our number sevens. My number seven game is the buoy for best missed opportunity for a Super Soaker and or Nickelodeon cross promotion, and the buoy goes to Splatoon 2. I love Splatoon 2. The fact that it's only quote unquote number seven on my list is not any indication of that it was a lesser game by any means. Just there were so many good games this year. I really had a lot of fun with Splatoon 2. Definitely, I haven't played it recently just because there's been so much to play, but I love, you know, that it basically is just Splatoon, but better, you know? I love the added modes in the game. I love that they were able to keep a little bit of that Miiverse feel in there. And I just love
being... Miiverse feeling.
I just love being a squid kid and splatting up the area and having super cool fashion. I think that Nintendo completely knocked it out of the park. A lot of people, you know, we had said, wow, this is really soon for a Splatoon 2, but I think that it was a grand success.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I'm going to go number seven, the buoy goes to best remake of a misunderstood bromance. This one is going to Yakuza Kiwami. This is, of course, the remake of the first Yakuza game done in the style of some of the later Yakuza games and Yakuza Zero in order to have sort of a more streamlined curve going into the narrative from Zero. Overall, really fantastic. Some of the narrative stuff they did with Goro Majima-san was a big plus for me. Just overall, love Yakuza, love how over the top it sometimes gets, and I'm still waiting on Yakuza Kiwami 2 to get an announcement over here.
And were there romantical themes?
You're just gonna have to play.
Oh, okay. Alright, well I guess that means it's time for our number 6 games of the year. And my number 6 goes to the buoy for best fan game released by a company that doesn't know what to do with the franchise, and that buoy goes to Sonic Mania. We talked about Sonic Mania here on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And it is just a success in every area. The level design, the music, it is the 2D Sonic I have been waiting for over 20 years, because, you know, you think of Sonic & Knuckles was, what, 94, 95? So, yeah. Just completely knocked it out of the park. I will be very disappointed if we don't see, it doesn't have to be called Sonic Mania 2, but I think that, you know, they have a great team and great foundation for years and years of Sonic 2D games to come.
Indeed. Number 6 for me is the best offline MMO, and the buoy goes to Assassin's Creed Origins. Assassin's Creed Origins was something of a reimagining for the series, taking a lot of the gameplay loops that are sort of already well known and baked into the gameplay, but layering on top of it a very traditional MMORPG framework. So you're getting levels, you're picking, you know, your skill tree, you're taking quests from a quest giver, giver, running out and doing the quest, then turning them in for rewards, including gear, and, you know, your gear drops in regular or uncommon or rare or epic or legendary. So, you know, very much, what if Assassin's Creed as an MMO? The thing is, this style of game design works so well for Assassin's Creed in this world, which is also a gigantic game world, one of the largest game worlds I can think of in recent history. Everything just comes together to really breathe new life into a franchise that was starting to feel asphyxiated by its extremely demanding annualized release schedule. And I want to say, Slaggy, I know you're a bit, at least you used to be a big Assassin's Creed fan. Have you played Origins yet?
I haven't, but I watched you play a lot of it, and I'm really impressed with a lot of the quality of life changes. I think that this is, you know, aside from the fact that I still wish that they had not made it so combat-focused, you know, ever since, I mean, really, that became a focus early on in the series, but you know, as much as I wish that they had really just stuck to stealthy assassinations, which are the most fun for me, it looks like overall, you know, for that series, it's a big step forward, and I'm eager to play it myself.
Excellent.
All right, I guess that brings us to our number five. And mine is best use of an original character in gaming. And, you know, this is one that, you know, you might be very surprised with. No, I was trying to get you to think that I was going to talk about Sonic Forces. No, this is Final Fantasy XIV Stormblood. And the reason I went with my silly, you know, title is that you are a hero of light in Final Fantasy XIV. And you're basically, you know, you have helped, you know, save the realm of Eorzea time and time again. And I think that Stormblood tells one of the best and most original stories in the Final Fantasy franchise. You know, as you play through, you know, the game, even if you did skip Heaven's Ward like me, you know, you still get very attached to these characters. And so I think even though it is an MMO, it stands up there with, you know, some of the best Final Fantasies. And I, you know, really enjoy a lot of the quality of life changes to, you know, to be more MMO specific to it. You know, they streamlined a lot of the classes, and, you know, there's a lot more quality of life changes coming in just a few weeks with the upcoming patches. So, despite also having just resubbed to World of Warcraft this weekend, you know, definitely looking forward to continuing to play Stormblood and keep up with the new content. And, you know, I haven't done any of the raiding, but, you know, I have done all of the main story quests. So staying current with that. So, yeah, just really was a very positive gameplay experience for me this year.
Excellent. I am glad that you got so much out of it, actually. I really liked it, too. My number five here, and this is the buoy for the best revival of a classic franchise, this is going to Sonic Mania. My reasons are very similar to those of Slaggy when he picked this as his number six under a very similar banner. It's clear that there is a really great team that's working with Sega right now that knows what to do with Sonic. It's just not called Sonic Team. So let's hope that Sega continues to work with Christian Whitehead and folks so that they can continue delivering such amazing content as this.
Excellent. So time for our number fours. And my award, the buoy for Best Family Tree School Project Gone Wrong, goes to What Remains of Edith Finch. I thought this was an extremely captivating story, just a very unique game, and really touching. I mean, you know, for those who aren't familiar with the premise of the game, you are Edith Finch, and you're basically going back to this old family house that, like, had additions and secret passageways built onto it, and there's a very odd family history going on. So in a way, it's like Gone Home, but like with a very dark family history. But you know, very interesting the way that each family member's story is kind of told using some different mechanics or different elements. And just a phenomenal game. Definitely had some very strong emotional moments for me with some of the stories. And yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but you know, like I was very surprised. You know, when I started it out, I was like, oh, you know, this is good. And you know, when I got into it, I'm like, oh, this could be top 10. But then by the time I finished it, I was like, wow, this is definitely top five for me.
Wow.
Just because of the way that the game wraps up and kind of the emotional punch that it gives you as you get towards unraveling the end of the story of the Finches.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm going to have to play that game. That was actually on my actually quite small list of games I missed this year.
I think you'd get a lot out of it. I recommend if you do get it on PC to play with a controller. I found some of the mouse and keyboard controls to be a little clunky in some ways, which is weird. It's opposite for me usually. So I had bought it on Steam, but I used my Xbox One controller. So
I would probably buy it on PS4 so that I can make Sulker watch me play it a little more easily.
Yeah.
Let's see. My number four, this is the buoy for best 3D Kirby clone, and that one is going to Mario Odyssey. Of course, it was a big deal. Mario had his big new-gen debut in 3D on Switch this year. This is, of course, an awesome delight. But for me, the biggest takeaway was really the focus on enemy abilities, very similar to what we typically see in the Kirby franchise. Unfortunately, of course, I did feel that the game design was a little less expansive than what I was expecting once we got to, you know, the very end of the game, sort of seeing most of what the game had in store. Still overall a timeless classic, just a timeless classic that I think falls a step shy of maybe some of the Mario 64s and Mario Galaxies of the world. Okay. And Saigi, I'm pretty sure this one's going to come up on your list at a point, so I'm very interested
no,
in
I hated it.
What you're going to say about it. So why don't we just go to your number three?
My number three is the buoy for best anthropomorphic portrayal of Millennial on Wii. This, of course, goes to Night in the Woods. You're probably not surprised. You know, this is a game that has had a lot of discussion around it. A lot of, you know, and for a year of where there were a lot of games that dealt with mental health issues and things like that, I did not find it, as someone who has, you know, had some history of mental health issues, I did not find it, like, you know, challenging to play. What I found it, I just found that the characters in the game world were, you know, very relatable as, you know, someone who, you know, the idea is going back to your old hometown and finding that things have changed and that you're, you know, not quite connecting to your friends in the same way. And then there's also, like, a Stephen King element in it that's pretty cool. But for me, like, the, you know, and one of the complaints, or not complaints, but one of the criticisms I've heard is that it's, you know, kind of just a very light platformer. And that's true. I mean, the gameplay isn't, you know, super groundbreaking, but for me, it's very similar. It strikes very similar chords to what Oxenfree did. You know, you it's about the relationships that you have with these you know, people in the game, and I just really, you know, I liked the spooky Stephen King Stranger Things things that ended up happening at the end of the game. But I mean, for me, it was really about you know, reconnecting with old friends and discovering, you know, kind of where things went wrong and just trying to make things feel normal again. There's some, of course, really cute, for those who are familiar with it, some really cute segments because you join up with your old band with your old friends, and so there's some really cute, like, Guitar Hero style musical mini games. I just think it's a really special game, and I still think that even people who typically think it might not be for them, maybe even just watch a Let's Play or something, if not something that you want to play through, because just a really neat little game and something really special and a lot of talent in that team.
Yeah, you know, I tried really hard to get into this game because I've heard so many people speak well of it. It ultimately just didn't click for me, but hearing you talk about it and repeatedly get so excited about it, I'm really going to fight and try to force myself to get into it one more time, because it really does sound like if I could get past whatever's preventing me from connecting to it, I would really get a lot out of it.
Yeah, Angus and Greg, who are a bear and a fox, or a wolf, I mean, I don't really remember, but anyway, I guess he's more of like a fox, but they're boyfriends, so, like, you know, there's some really cool, and not just, like, token queers, like, you know, it explores them being, like, basically the only gay couple in town, so, you know, there's some really cool things going on with that game.
Yeah, absolutely. That it, like, it's what I hear from everyone. So, all right. Well, with all that having been said, let me go on to my number three. This is Best Assassin's Creed Clone, and the buoy goes to
Borderlands
Zelda.
2! Borderlands 2! I'm like one of those Kanyes.
Zelda Breath of the Wild. Of course, that sounds like a very derivative award, Best Assassin's Creed Clone, but what I really mean to say is that
Link Zelda can climb and jump.
Zelda really achieved new heights by...
Literally.
By the dev team really looking at what other people are doing in modern game design and bringing their unique ideas with environment and world interaction into a space that also takes advantage of developments that have happened in open world design and gameplay. I never would have thought that I wanted sandboxy, open worldy Nintendo games, but Mario Odyssey and Zelda Breath of the Wild told me that my opinion was wrong, basically.
And for you to love a Zelda game as much as you enjoyed Breath of the Wild was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. For me too. But it turns out that this breath of fresh air, this inspiration from other franchises, this reinterpretation of what being a Zelda game really means, for me was tremendously effective. I do know a lot of people who don't care for Breath of the Wild that much, and obviously that's fine. For me, the changes that they made it an interesting game again, whereas otherwise I haven't found Zelda to be traditionally all that meaningful or interesting. So, huge, huge marks for me. I thought that Zelda was a tremendous game, and deeply, deeply, deeply excited to see what those folks come up with next.
Indeed. All right, so time for our number twos. Oh, no. Anyway, my buoy goes to the best game about taking a world tour with your friend, and that goes to Super Mario Odyssey. I'm sure at this point you can guess what my number one is as well. It was really tough picking which one was the best. I will explain why I went with my number one choice when I talk about my number one game. But for me, I understand you as someone who has very deeply consumed the 3D Mario games over the years, and, you know, have some very strong opinions about them. Compared to me, who's really been more of a, you know, 2D Mario is kind of where I call home, you know, in the Mario franchise. And that, you know, I've played all of the Mario 3D platformers, not necessarily to completion. But coming from someone whose favorite 3D Mario was Super Mario Sunshine, that probably says a lot why I like Odyssey the best. I mean, I don't know, maybe not, but... I think the things that Odyssey did that traditional 3D Mario fans felt was a little lacking is what made it work for me. For me, going into the same painting and being, you know, maybe stuck on a certain star and, like, feeling like that is a roadblock for me, whereas, you know, in Odyssey, you're on, you know, not a world because they're just different lands, but, you know, in the different lands where you know, there's just things to discover, and it's like, oh, you know, if you can't get this one where you're throwing Cappy on the Scarecrow and doing a little timed thingy, you know, those types of challenges maybe aren't, you know, where you excel, but here's some other ones for you, you know. So I think we're having that option going through. And I mean, I guess, you know, moving forward in the franchise, there did start to be more of a story thread kind of carrying through. But when I think back to Mario 64, it was kind of just like, oh, the princesses made you a cake, but you've got to rescue her. You know, I just really appreciate that there was a really fun and cute story beat driving through the game. And just a lot of fun surprises and really clever uses of that capture mechanic. Like, I love the one in the Wooden Kingdom, which is the one where you have the little grassy guys that extend their legs. Like, had a lot of fun with those. And just every time I went to a new kingdom, finding, you know, the new traversal techniques and then applying what I learned in the previous worlds, like, I just had a great time with it. So, you know, definitely excited to see what's coming next for that franchise. All right, and time for number one.
Actually, it's time for my number two.
Oh, right.
This is the buoy. This is the buoy for the best use of a video game to explore the malleability of spoken stories and the meaning of existence, which can, of course, only be one game, which is Nier Automata. It was not Borderlands 2. God damn it. It was Nier Automata. You know, this is so weird because, you know, typically when I talk about video games, I talk about how mechanics focused I am. I want tight combat systems.
I don't care about story. That's you.
But both of my top two this year are games that maybe, like, oh, I think these games are mechanically interesting, but they're not mechanical excellence. But they're both games that really used their medium, used being video games to explore other things. Particularly with Nier Automata, you know, people have written essays on this game, on how it uses its own structure to tell a story, how that story changes upon repeated plays of the game, and its brilliant use of the New Game Plus feature to actually itself become a part of the narrative. And I'm trying to speak around some things here. But all in all, for me, if you're interested in game narratives, if you're interested in what the medium of games can do for storytelling, if you're interested in games that refuse to be put in one little box in terms of genre, and you don't mind a game sometimes being a third-person shooter, sometimes being, you know, a top-down shooter, sometimes being a platinum game-style action game, I think that Nier Automata is one that you should definitely check out. And if possible, play through it a few times. Use that New Game Plus feature. See the entire narrative as it's meant to be seen. And I think you'll come away thinking pretty highly of this game and excited to see what Yoko Taro and the folks over at Platinum Games all come up with on their own in the future.
Yeah, that's excellent. This is one that I really meant to get around to, but just knowing that there is such a time investment in it, just unfortunately wasn't one I can make happen. But definitely something I'm looking forward to hopefully this year. You know, I'd love if there was a way that they could make a Switch game. But our Switch port, but, you know.
Yeah.
All right, now, time for our number one Game Buoy Game of the Year Game Award. Mine goes to Best Game About Waking Up After 100 Years and Helping Your Old Spirit Friends. This also could have been called Best Shark Boyfriend, because this is Breath of the Wild. You know, it was very close between this and Odyssey for me, but when I thought about it, just going back to Breath of the Wild and every element of discovery and wonder that I felt when I was playing it, even though it was an earlier experience in the year, I had to, you know, really appreciate, like, you know, what this did for not only this franchise, but this genre. I mean, I think that it is a master class in game design. I do think there are ways that it could improve even further, and I look forward to seeing what Nintendo does next. I just really, like, we, you know, we've been talking about that Zelda needed a breath of fresh air, and this was the Breath of the Wild fresh air that it really needed, and I couldn't give any more praise to this game than I have, so I'm gonna go ahead and kick it off to your number one.
My number one is Best Use of a Video Game to Explore Mental Health Issues. This one is going to Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice. Never would have believed that this was going to be my personal pick of game of
the
year.
Ninja Theory is game is your number one game.
Yeah, right. But you know, the thing is, major event that happened in my life in 2017 was, of course, my own formal diagnosis with mental health issues. I went through, you know, a mental health breakdown and ended up having to undergo some pretty intense psychotherapy. I'm still on medication for my mental health issues every day. And playing a game which... it doesn't gamify mental health issues, but Senua's mental health issues are very much front and center of the game's narrative, sometimes presented as a negative, sometimes presented as a positive, which was really interesting, but did also speak to me as I was coming to terms with my own diagnoses. Just overall, you know, was a really powerful game for me to play that really positively changed my life to play it when I did, while I was home recovering from... some of these issues and playing and relating to a character who was dealing with her own issues and trying to work out what parts of her life were things that were impacted by these mental health issues and which parts are things that maybe didn't happen the way she remembered because of her own interpretation of those events. Overall, I think it's just a really stunningly crafted game.
That's
uses its sounds design, uses its writing, it uses every aspect of its design in service of its message and its story, and it all comes together in a way that I think is really incredible to have done on such a small budget as, you know, an indie game effectively. So I would consider it an absolute must play of 2017.
Excellent. I'm glad that it resonated with you so much.
Indeed. All right. Well, all of this having been said, that kind of starts us winding down. Let me ask you, Slaggy, you know, last year we made some New Year's resolutions. I know mine was to play more indie games. I do actually think that I was very successful in that. I actually played more games in general in 2017. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, some of my top 10 games were indie games, so, or, you know, even if not formally indie games, even, like, you can kind of consider Sonic Mania basically being an an indie game that, you know, was published by Sega or contracted by Sega. So, yeah, I think I was successful there.
And do you have a 2018 resolution?
I think it's probably, like, one of my common threads this episode was, oh, I would have liked to have played it, but it's such a time investment. So, either if I am playing those types of games, like RPGs, seeking out RPGs on the Switch that I can feel that I can, you know, sink more time in without having to sit in front of a TV, or, you know, just make the commitment to really, you know, if it's something that I want to play, really just stick with it.
Excellent, excellent. I think my resolution for this year is going to be only buying games day one if I'm going to play them day one, otherwise waiting for a sale. Too many games that I eventually got to this year, I didn't play until they were half off or more than half off. And as I'm thinking about it, you know, I live a very privileged life with regard to games. I buy a lot of games that I want. Some of them I don't get to play until months later, and I'm going to start really being more cautious about that and saving money rather than spending money I don't need to spend and making better life choices. A healthier 2018 is my goal.
Sounds good.
So let's talk a little bit about most anticipated games, gaming events, and predictions for 2018. For me, I think the most anticipated game is probably Bloodstained.
This is,
of course, the 2D revival of like a Castlevania Igarashi style games. Was big on Kickstarter. Looks like it's really picking up some steam as far as the updates go from Kickstarter. I'm really curious to see how E3 goes this year. Really hoping we get a Smash Brothers announcement of some kind in 2018. Very interested in seeing what Microsoft will do. You know, they had big sales numbers over this past holiday season due to the Xbox One X, which remains a very impressive piece of tech. And Sony, their niche is VR, but I don't know what they're going to do if they're not moving the most units on their hardware, because they've kind of had a lock for the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
I think this holiday season will probably have shaken them up a little bit. Slaggy, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many games that are really exciting. I'm looking forward to Faye, as we talked about. You know, that was one that just really caught my eye E3s ago. I'm really excited for Travis Strikes Again, which is due out this year. Kirby Star Allies looks a lot of fun. Monster Hunter World actually seems like something I'm probably going to get into since you and Salker and I have been having fun with Monster Hunter Generations lately, so that should be exciting. My prediction is that Sony is going to, like, I kind of was thinking the same thing. Sony has kind of realized they've put all of this into VR and that they're really going to try to play it up and really hype people up on it, and whether they succeed or not, it remains to be seen. I think Microsoft is going to continue focusing on the fact that they're backwards compatibility, that you can experience these Xbox experiences anywhere and play old games, new games, whether you have a 1S or a 1X. And I think, you know, they will continue to do well there. And I think that my prediction for Nintendo is that they have some aces up their sleeves that they are not showing us. They're intentionally being a little coy about it. So that has me curious.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think that about wraps it up for last year and the year ahead. So
yeah. So I guess we should dive into our social links real quick.
I think it's time.
We're going to start with our social links question of the week, which was, this week we look back on the biggest news and games of 2017. What was notable for you in gaming last year? What are you looking forward to in 2018? Mike I, also known as ActDeft, said the Switch hit it out of the park in its first year. So many great games for such a great console. Hopefully 2018 is the same for video games in general. And Colin M, similarly saying the Switch definitely, it exceeded my expectations and has opened up more gaming options for me in terms of portability. Then there's Xbox One X, which isn't as useful as the Switch, but makes some very pretty looking games with the right TV. Purchasing new systems in the same year was not kind on my wallet, but it was worth it. In 2018, I'm looking to switch ports of Wii U games. Is that silly? I need a re-release of Xenoblade Chronicles X, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and I don't know, just for fun, how about Wonderful 101? I would be
yes.
Okay with all of those. Over on the Twitters, we have a few New Year's tweets here. Not saying Happy New Year, but we have a tweet from Gym Leader Derek saying, Spike, point, your voice sounds extra sexy on GameVui.org this episode.
Oh, hell no.
That was because I made a joke about it. And then you said, oh, you're so mean. He said, you know I love you, boo. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Great episode. Aw, thank you. And in regards to our last episode, Gotta Catch 'Em Up, episode 150. By the way, congratulations to you and me on 150 episodes. 151 now.
Yay.
You. So we had 808 is Bob Time on Twitter saying, I know what I'm listening to on my way home. Hearts. And I'm just going to assume that is based on the content of Game Buoy and not you having a sexy husky voice, according to our listeners.
All right.
Well, that being said, it is time to wrap it up. So we love your feedback. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, subscriptions, ratings, reviews. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter. Our home base is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And our mail is MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
It's the emails. It's the thing that people are doing. Spike, talk to us about VogNetwork.com.
Yeah, VogNetwork.com. You can listen to us stream over there, as well as other shows like Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. And the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. In non-VOG shows, you should check out the Nintendo Love Fest and their sister show, X Nation. The first, of course, does exactly what it says on the tin. The second is an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd be remiss not to mention the Astral Era podcast. Astral Era is a Final Fantasy XIV podcast focused on in-depth discussion of new content, game mechanics, story/lore, music, and, of course, glamour. You should also check out Slagkick's show, Reading is Fundamental, featuring myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness, where we talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Since a new season starts in like a week, that show's about to get rolling, and I'm very excited about it. Slaggy, why don't you take us to a game bar?
Yes, Game Bar is part of the Hunty Bunch. Game Bar is where you can kick back and listen to the sassy staccato of Jeremiah, Toops, and Todd. That came from their Twitter, so, you know, something, something, Prairie Home Companion, that person was bad. Video Game Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, even if they aren't a regular show anymore. I am hoping that I'm using the power of, like, The Secret or whatever that thing on Oprah was, and willing it into the universe. I'd like to shout out to the Magical Boys podcast, a pop culture podcast from a queer's perspective. The allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. They are some star allies, I would say. I'd like to shout out to our sister shows, Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I definitely feel like I'm more excited about anime lately over the past month or so than I have been in the past year or two. So looking forward to some more Anime Buoy to set sail your way. And also Stabcast is your twice monthly look at the deeper worlds of Pokemon. We're looking forward at continuing our look at Ultra Sun and Moon with you, the show that we do with Trainer Salker. Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, which was a project that aimed to orchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They forever poured out their 40 something. I don't know. I need a 40. I'm losing it here. But, you know, we love them. Rest in peace, etc.
Yeah, so I want to note, we will definitely have episodes of Stabcast and Anime Buoy up for you in the next few weeks. Things have been pretty crazy behind the scenes here for a minute now. I think y'all at home can probably tell, but things are settling back in quite nicely, and we will have more content for you quickly.
Looking forward to, you know, we weren't able to bring it live this time, but we're looking forward to Game Buoy Live for our 6th anniversary this spring, so look forward to that.
Please look forward to it. All right, it is time to wrap this up. So thank you all so much out there in Internet Radio Land for listening to us this lovely Monday evening. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We'll be back at you in a week or two, but until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And see you, Space Cowboy.
There's always time for a cocktail.
Testing. I am testing. Testing. I am testing.